business.
Only if you behave though.
That means Tom is taking away my card.
Yes, please.
Today we have two papers, agenda papers 4A and 4B. I would like to focus on agenda paper 4A. Agenda paper 4A, we compare the ISB tentative decision with the FASB amendment on the definition of a business. In particular, I would like to start from Appendix A in page 12 of the paper. This is a table, a three-page table. On the left, you can find the summary of the ISB tentative decision. And on the right, you can find the summary of the FSB decision. There are some differences, and now I will try to explain these differences. Starting from the definition of output, we can see that the amendments are the same. The only difference is that the ISB decided to clarify in the application guidance the meaning of other revenues, while the FASB explained the meaning of other revenues in the basis for conclusion. So this is not a big difference. Regarding the definition of a business, the ISB decided to align the definition of a business in Appendix A of IFRS 3 to the revised definition of output in paragraph B7C of IFRS 3. The FASB did not change the definition of a business. However, the FASB added an explicit reference to the guidance of the definition of a business, which includes the definition of output. So also in this case, I don't see a big difference between the two amendments. Regarding the minimum requirements to be a business, you can see that there are exactly the same. Moving on the screening test in page 13, you can see that the screening tests are the same. There is only a little difference. The difference is that the screening test, according to the ISB tentative decision, is optional, while according to the FASB amendments, the screening test is mandatory. There is also another little difference in the screening test. The difference is in the second line of the table, because the FASB excluded from the gross assets acquired the cash and cash equivalents acquired. The ISB didn't discuss this issue yet, and we plan to discuss this issue at a future meeting. Regarding the guidance on similar assets is included in the screening test. Also in this case, there are not big differences. There is some difference just in the wording. And the only difference is that the ISB decided to clarify that the new guidance on similar asset is not intended to modify other standards. But this is not a substantial difference, in my view. Regarding the guidance of substantive processes, we have some difference. The first difference is highlighted in the first line. In particular, when a set does not have output, according to the ISB tentative decision, the set must include an organized workforce that may be made up of employee or accessed through an outsourcing agreement. we can see that according to the FASB amendment, when a set does not have outputs, the workforce must be made up of employees, so cannot be accessed to an outsourced. And there is also another difference at the bottom of the page, because the SB decided to specify in this guidance that difficulties in replacing an acquired workforce may indicate that the workforce performs a substantive process. This is an additional indicator that is present in the ISB temporary decision and is not included in the past. Last page, goodwill, there is another difference. The ISB in June decided not to include the statement proposed in the exposure draft that the presence of more than a significant amount of goodwill may be an indicator that acquired process is substantive. This statement is included in the FASB amendments, but also in this case I don't think that this is a big difference, because in the basis for conclusion the FASB explained that this is not an additional step of the analysis, it is just another indicator. About transition provision, there are no differences. In page 10, we ask you your views on this decision, in particular on the differences between the two amendments.
Okay. Noble?
Yes, thank you. We are concerned with making the screening test optional. And I think the reason is that if we understand the decision correctly, then entity can look at the results with and without the screening test and then make a decision whether to apply the option or not. And we cannot find a way how to prevent entities from doing that. And that leads us to whether the screening test should not be there at all or should be mandated. And from our point of view, in the spirit of convergence, we would support making it mandatory.
It's on the same point. I'd just like to clarify a doubt. So in the IFRS framework, the screen test is optional, and you can conclude that it's an asset, or you can conclude that it's a business without applying the screen test. Is that correct?
Yes. According to the ISB, you have two tools, the screening test and the guidance on the substantive process.
Yes.
The entity may choose the best tool, so may choose to go to the screening test. If the fair value of the gross asset acquired is concentrated in a single asset, the transaction is an asset acquisition.
No, but that's clear. But if I do choose not to apply the screening test, I can conclude that it's an asset, or I can conclude that it's not an asset.
If you choose to go directly to the guidance of substantive process, you assess if a substantive process has been acquired, and you can conclude if there is a substantive process, yes, this is a business combination.
Yeah, I know that we are not mainly concerned about enforcement, but I tend to agree with him that if you retain the screen test, I would make it mandatory, because companies can do it and say that they didn't do it, so it's very hard to prove that you haven't done something. Yeah. It's easy to prove that you've done something, but it's very hard to do that you haven't done something. So it's from enforcement point of view, auditing point of view, that's very tricky to have this optional test.
I understand this point. I just want to emphasize the objective of this project. The objective of this project is to simplify the life of preparers.
I'm not sure that making it optional would simplify.
Yes, because I am a preparer, I can choose the best tool.
Okay.
But just to build on that, and I'm trying to remember, so tell me if I misspeak. But I thought that we made it optional because a number of respondents, including some in this room, I think, made the point that they thought we could actually be increasing the burden for preparers if they had to do the test. And so there may be some for which it would not simplify their lives, it would in fact have the contrary effect. Is that fair?
Exactly. Many respondents, including some ASAF members, told us a mandatory screening test means that I clearly acquire a business, but I have to do the screening test even though I already know that I have acquired a business, and maybe in some limited circumstances I have to conclude that this is an asset acquisition, even though I have acquired all the inputs, all the processes, all the outputs, and I know that this is a business combination. To reply to this comment, we suggested an optional speed test.
Yes, can I build on that as well? Because there are a lot of concerns that came up. So one of the concerns was that sometimes a screening test might lead to the wrong answer. What people might perceive as the wrong answer. Secondly, there are a lot of detailed questions about particular aspects of the screening test, like what do you mean by similar asset? Do you include deferred tax? Do you include cash and all these other things? And the objective of the screening test, I think, was to provide a practical shortcut in some cases. It's not going to be perfect because it's a kind of rule of thumb. Sometimes it will work and sometimes it won't. But it's designed to lead to the right answer most of the time in cases where the answer is probably going to be relatively obvious anyway. So what happens if it gives you the wrong answer? And when we were discussing it, we distinguished what we call false positives and false negatives. So a false positive would be if it says it's an asset purchase when in reality it's a business combination or business acquisition. And a false negative would be if it says it's a business combination when in reality it's an asset purchase. Well, if it's a false positive, the risk is that you treat it as an asset acquisition, not a business combination. And the consequences of that are, first of all, you don't recognize goodwill. Well, goodwill is an economic thing. The measurement's a bit imperfect, but that you'd lose some information there. But remember, we're talking about cases where substantially all of the fair value is actually concentrated in a single asset or similar assets. So by definition, it's not going to be a large quantity of sort of really economic goodwill that you're missing by that. Secondly, there are some other measurement differences, recognition and measurement differences between asset purchase and business combinations. For example, contingent liabilities, there are some differences. None of those differences, it seems to us, have really much to do with the distinction between asset purchases and business combinations. They're more to do with differences in the standards. And so we didn't feel that you'd actually be depriving people of more information in those cases, of information that would make much difference to users. Now, what happens if you say, if you get a false negative? Well, then, of course, what you do is you're forcing people to go back through the rest of the assessment anyway to figure out whether there's whether they've got a business combination or not. So if you've set the criteria too narrowly, the danger is that you make people go through two rounds of assessment to get to the right answer. If you set it too broadly, there's a risk that you'll have slightly too many categorized as asset purchases. And it seemed to us that that wasn't a big risk in terms of outcomes. Some of the comment letters suggested that we should make people do both steps anyway and do the 90% test and also go through the full battery of all the other tests as well, the business process test. But that seems to contradict the whole idea of trying to simplify it by giving people a simple rule of thumb. And we also thought that by making it optional, it takes the pressure off the cases where people feel that the rule of thumb actually gives the wrong answer, because then they can just bypass the screening test and go straight to the sort of real test. So for all those reasons, it seemed to us that the downside of actually making it optional was relatively small, and that it was consistent with the board's original objective of trying to simplify in cases where the answer ought to be relatively straightforward.
Tim.
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, well, I'm supportive of the board's tentative proposals, and I understand what you are wanting to achieve on this whole issue that you've just been explaining, but I suppose I am concerned that it could be rather messy. So the question would be is, could we achieve the same outcome that you're trying to achieve by making the screening test mandatory? And if you don't like the outcome, i.e. if it leads you to the next step, well, then you have to go to the next step. I understand that's the requirement. But if you've got a concentration of fair value in a single asset or a single group of assets, why not then give preparers the choice to either stop there and live with the simplified answer, or to move on to step two? Because my understanding at the moment is we're saying is you need to decide whether or not you do the screening test or not. Once you've done the screening test, it's terminative. That's right. But if I don't do the screening test, then I can just go straight to step two. Now, I think what we're saying is, in practice, this could be messy in the sense that if a company has started the screening test, done the screening test, and gotten to the answer, which, yes, there is a concentration, and that is determinative, but they don't think it really is going to give them the right answer, then it's going to be a case of, no, well, we didn't really do the screening test, and it wasn't really official, and it wasn't really this. But at the end of the day, aren't we still trying to get back to the same answer? So that's why I'm suggesting that you make the screening test mandatory, and if you have to go to step two, well, then you have to go to step two. If you don't have to, you then give the choice of whether or not you stop there and you live with the easy answer, or otherwise you proceed to step two if you choose to.
Kim, does that risk forcing people to do the screening test even though they know it's not the appropriate test? They know they're going to have to do the other one anyway.
Well, the thing is that
even if you think it's not the appropriate test for the circumstances you're testing,
yes,
it seems like you would say you have to do it anyway,
okay,
and get an auditor, and et cetera, and then do the other one as well.
Fair enough. So then otherwise it would either be, yes, that it's optional, and if you want to go to step two, then you go straight to step two. Alternatively, if you happen to do the screening test, I think you should still have the choice on moving to step two, you wish to.
Absolutely. So your point would be that it is determinative if I want to.
If I wanted to be, but just doing it doesn't mean I have to accept
the outcome
that it's determinative. Yes. Okay. So
rebuttable presumption.
Yeah.
That's right. So either way, you've got the choice of going to step two if you want to go to step two. I don't think that you should then be precluded just because you started down a particular path, because I think in practice it's going to get messy as to, did I actually go down that path or I didn't go down that path.
At the end of the story, you always have a choice.
That is what I'm proposing. That's right. But I just think at the moment, once you start going down that, you then are potentially stuck. And then you're going to say, no, well, we didn't really start there. We actually didn't mean to do that. And that's messy.
So I think I probably prefer the second option to the first option because of the idea of forcing somebody to
fail. Fair enough.
Even if they think their test is not actually going to produce
absolutely, fair enough.
It's not going to produce the best reflection.
Correct.
Of what the underlying.
Yes. Okay, so then make it optional, and even if you do decide to do it, you've still got a choice to move to step two if you wish to.
You would do both.
I'm agreeing with Daryl now that I'm agreeing with
what I think I'm hearing Kim say is essentially that I can choose whether I want to go directly to second test,
yes,
or do the screening test. It's a choice.
That's right.
Even if I've done the screening test,
yes,
at the end of that process, I believe that the answer is not an appropriate reflection, I still am allowed to go the extra step.
To go to step
detail
two.
Test.
That's right.
Simplification.
That's right.
That's right.
So it does come down to essentially saying that the screening test is only determinative if I wanted to.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yes.
From less optional, you mean. Got to more optional.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris.
So we're probably slightly similar in that we weren't so pleased about just the straight option, but we were sort of heading more down the rebuttable presumption route that you would do the test unless you had some clear evidence that you didn't need to, and then you just move through into the other one. I had a question about one of the other aspects, not so much on the screening test. Do you want that now or do you want that later?
Go ahead.
So my question was really, I think I understand exactly why the ISB's got to its position in terms of the outsourcing contract and saying if in substance the outsourcing contract gives you employees, then you should still get the right answer. But I was just interested in why the FASB went the other way and said you had to have actual employees and not an outsourced contract.
I think we just thought it complicated the model. We couldn't think of agreements where you would have long-term control over people through an outsourcing contract that would be akin to the same relationship that you might have through your own employees.
Okay, so
when you started going through that agreement and then figuring out whether the actual terms of that outsourcing agreement give you control over that, control is not the right word, but the same economics that you would have in an owned workforce, we couldn't think of very many situations in which you would conclude that that outsourcing contract is, in fact, a substantive process. So we thought it confused the model. But, I mean, you can see that either way. And I don't think that's a substantive set of transactions that you're going to find a difference in.
Since you have the floor, Jim.
So the screening test, I mean, we struggle with the same question, rebuttable presumption, at least in the U.S. context. If we made it a rebuttable presumption, then effectively it was no simplification, because you would do the screening test and then you would be required to do test two to try and rebut it. So that wouldn't in fact be, at least we didn't think, a simplification. We didn't think necessarily about making it optional. I do agree with some of the concerns about if you make it optional, how do you know whether somebody's done the screening test? I look at the, I start doing a purchase price allocation and you say, well, I didn't do the math in my head. I mean, I saw that 99% of the value was in a single asset, but I didn't do the screening test. I mean, people know how to do math without calculators and writing it down. So I don't know how you would ever determine whether they actually applied the test or not. So that, but that doesn't mean you, I just think if you make it optional, you ought to be clear that having performed it doesn't preclude you from going to step two, to Kim's point. We thought on balance, when people say I get the wrong answer, there is no definition in nature of what is a business versus an asset, and these things started, the wrong answer was usually judged based upon the outcome, meaning what accounting I got. So I wanted to be in business combination accounting and I'm not, so I have the wrong answer. Or I want to be in asset acquisition accounting and I'm not, and therefore I have the wrong answer. I don't think most of these arguments were about at nature this is really a business when it's 99% focused in a single asset. And so I think that notwithstanding the fact that you can then come up with examples that maybe look more akin to one or the other, but I think on balance, right or wrong, was judged on the accounting outcome. And with your assessment on the others, I agree that most of them don't seem like significant differences. For example, the clarifying the definition of a business, I actually think you have the preferable approach. The reason we didn't go down that path is we used that definition for other purposes that not-for-profit and other things that are trying to distinguish what is a business activity from a not-for-profit activity. And so we thought it might create even more confusion, but for purposes of, which is why we dealt with it, of saying, but if you're determining that, it has to have an output. But yours is a much more cleaner, there's a much cleaner suggestion. So I thought a number of these were just cleaner than what we had done.
Can I just add one thing? It was kind of interesting because of Jim's comments and Peter's comments. Peter's comments would kind of imply that if there's really no difference between outcome of whether it's an acquisition or business, and why are we actually doing this project? So, and I think the heat is there, so people do perceive that there are significant differences in the outcome. So I'd just be very careful.
There are, and that actually in the U.S., and few of us on the board would have preferred to eliminate the differences between the two, because there really shouldn't be a distinction. We actually have a follow-on project where we're looking at why do we get different outcomes between business combination and asset acquisition? Why do we account for transaction costs one way in the U.S., one way in a business combination? And so that's actually the important project to us.
Yeah, my point wasn't that there aren't differences. It's that those differences aren't really likely to mean that users will lose information if you've ended up in one place rather than the other.
In certain of the fact patterns at the extreme.
On the edges.
Yeah.
So just be careful in your bases how you write that.
Linda?
Typically, I'm the one who would say yes, that the words have to be completely the same. So I have sympathy for my colleagues, but we took a slightly different tack. But I ask the staff, and that's code for Rebecca, so if you have any hard questions, you can ask her to do. We actually took your little table, and then there's a third thing, and we put on our uniquely Canadian ability to read the two sets of standards, because we've been doing this for many years, and we said, can you get to the same outcome? So that's actually what we tried to do, looking at where the two boards have landed. And I might say that I overviewed this on the basis that I have done many acquisition accounting and many business purchase accounting in old Canadian GAAP, U.S. GAAP, and IFRS. So I also put that lens on. And so if you look at the sheet here, what you see, although I always find it fun when the staff gives me different terms, but they highlighted some differences in red. Then they said it was similar. Then they said same net effect. Then they said same, 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 test is the same, and effectively the same, which is an interesting one. So little gradients there in terms of, you know. But exactly. But I think it's important to have a kind of a big picture view of this. I've had many discussions with various FASB members, and I think Russ's famous, most favorite example is the billboard that's accounted for as a business combination. So I think the boards were starting at different points, and I think as Mary's whispered in my ear, trying to solve different problems. Okay? And I acknowledge that I think it's very important to recognize that what you're trying to achieve here is the outcome. I think you've done a good job of trying to keep as much of it in the same spot as you possibly could. I would agree with your assessment in terms of when you went through the earlier comments. I know that in our country, the biggest companies, and you know, I'll remind you that over 60% of our market cap is dual listed, so they're used to dealing with both IFRS and US GAAP. They're going to read this exactly the way I just went through it. And they're going to do everything in their power to come to the same type of outcome for where the facts and circumstances are appropriate. So I would simply say, yeah, there's some issues. I think both boards have done a conscientious job. I'm generally satisfied with where you're ending, and the only concern we now have is you've got different effective dates, so there's going to be a little noise in those different effective dates. Move on. Get it finished. Good. You have our support.
Andrew.
Thanks. I think like some others, perhaps a lot of our discussion did seem to focus on the concept of having a sort of optional test with a mandatory outcome. I don't think there's really any other precedent for that in IFRS. And the phrase that came up was moral hazard. And we're not in the enforcement or auditing business, but it almost must be kind of laying a temptation in one's path of getting partway through the test and only completing the test if you like the answer it gives. That's what I mean by the moral hazard. So that is a concern. Our comment letter suggested this should be more in the nature of an indicator or a rebuttable presumption. And I have no basis to deviate from that recommendation based on what I've heard, but it's been an interesting debate. On the other differences, yeah, although I think some of our constituents do care greatly about getting to a precisely converged outcome overall, more cares about getting the best answer for the IFRS constituency. And I would support the tentative decision to remove the reference to an insignificant amount of goodwill on the very simple basis that I don't think companies should have to do what we used to call a purchase price allocation and determine the amount of goodwill before knowing they've definitely got a business. So it shouldn't be part of it. Well, that's it really, but I think overall, we're, with the exception of the screening test, we're comfortable with where the board's getting to.
Andrew? Andres.
All right. Andrei. I'd like to follow up from a point that Linda made. I've been on record before in saying, for me, the words don't need to be converged. It's the outcome that should be converged as much as possible. One point where I hesitate is if we are sure that works, say, for the audit profession and for the preparer community, does it also work in the regulatory environment for the securities regulator? So if you think about the IFRS world got their version, get to their outcome, but then our foreign filers enter the US space, which have the US reading of it. Do they still believe that they get to the same result, yes or no, and vice versa? I think that's something that we then need to keep in mind.
Ronnie?
Yes. AOS members commented only on the screening test. Some AOC members raised a concern about the screening test being optional, while one member agreed with it. the reason why members are opposed to the optional screening test is because it can create structuring opportunities and diminish the compatibility of financial statements. They, however, have different suggestions. One member thinks that the convergence between IFRS and US GAAP should be prioritized. Therefore, it suggested that the screening test be mandatory and determinative. The other member, however, thinks that providing a high-quality principles-based standard is more important than the convergence between IFRS and US GAAP. Therefore, this member recommends removing the screening test in its entirety or making the screening test a part of a holistic assessment. Moreover, this member strongly recommends that the ISB first conducts a thorough effect analysis, particularly on providing the optional screening test before finalizing its decision. The member who agrees with the ISB's tentative decision say that the optional testing screening test would address the concern raised by many respondents to the EP. So I would say that the AOS members have mixed views.
Just quickly, we are supportive of the final decision, tentative decision of the board. We supported initially the rebuttable presumption, but we fully agree that the option which is suggested here prevent from having a double test or double more complicated issue. So since it is here for simplification reasons, so we agree with that.
I know that on the surface it seems a little bit odd to have an option, and it also seems a little bit odd to have an option that sort of has a mandatory outcome and then an option overlaid with it. It's an unusual combination. But stepping back from that, if we're comfortable with the outcome of the test and with the idea of the simplification, that means we're happy to accept the outcome of that test, and we presumably are happy if somebody does more work and does the full analysis, why do we really mind which path people go down? I think that was underlying ultimately our logic, I think.
But then it comes back how assured we are that the test leads to the correct result in at least the vast majority of the cases.
And I think we went through that analysis and decided we were, otherwise we would have been the test full stop.
Yeah.
Just in the outcomes is the real important thing, and I agree with that. And today we had converged language and we didn't have converged outcomes. Right. And so I actually think that this is perhaps more likely to result in real convergence of outcomes, including through all of the education that occurred because of going through these two projects. And obviously we'll see down the road, but it wasn't that we were looking for differences in outcome when we made our decisions. In fact, we took it on in part because the example Linda used and other examples like that, which is things that very clearly looked like assets were being pushed into a model in the U.S. that said they're not assets. And so I think in any case, this is going to result between the two boards in closer alignment.
Good. Well, on that happy note, I think we can conclude this discussion. Shall we reconvene at 1:45? Yes.